Hi there, you're listening to the Health Justice Radio Collective on CFMU 93.3 FM. Before we get started today, I want to read you a poem. It's called Manifesto, The Mad Farmer Liberation Front by Wendell Berry. And this is just an excerpt. Ask the questions that have no answers. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest, that you did not plant, that you will not live to harvest. Say that the leaves are harvested when they have rotted into mold. Call that profit. Prophecy such returns.
You're listening to Health Justice Radio Collective on CFMU 93.3.
Okay, we're back in studio again. My name is Nikki, and on the board is Eric Brown. And with us in studio are some very special guests, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you for having us on today. We're the Knowing the Land is Resistance Collective. So we're a group that organizes out of the area between the Niagara Escarpment and Lake Ontario, exploring the ways that we can cultivate a deeper relationship to the land where we live and how that deeper relationship can advise our work as activists.
And can you tell me a little bit about how your collective formed?
The collective began actually out of a Hamilton Free School class of folks coming together for a hike through Coots Paradise in the wintertime, and through some really good discussions and dialogues that came out of that class, the work continued from there.
And so tell me about that work. What is it that you've been doing?
One of the things that class revealed is that a lot of people in the city are hungry to know more about the land, that wild spaces breed a lot of curiosity and joy in folks, and a lot of people are looking for ways to connect to them more. As well, a lot of people have passions for social justice, for ecological justice, and for all kinds of causes within their communities. And exploring the link that wild spaces and the health of the land and the way the health has changed over time can teach us, can make us more effective in pursuing all kinds of struggles.
So Hamiltonians who are listening, or anyone who's lived here for a while, is probably familiar with the resistance that grew in opposition to the construction of the expressway through the Red Hill Valley. For those who don't know, opponents to the expressway criticized the environmental damage that was going to be a result of the expressway construction. And they also asserted that the chief beneficiaries of the highway would be the long-distance trucking companies and those traveling from Detroit to Buffalo, and as well as the developers who were developing on the Hamilton Mountain. Members of the Friends of the Red Hill Valley and members of Six Nations Confederacy blocked construction of the expressway and occupied trees in 2004. Now, we know, unfortunately, the expressway was built. I'm wondering, I mean, I don't know if you two were here at that time, but I'm wondering how that struggle informs your current struggle.
The Red Hill Expressway struggle was a really important moment in the history of movements in Hamilton. And I feel like in many ways we inherited the momentum that was built in that struggle in the form of social centers that now exist in the downtown and many other groups that have organized around similar principles. So we were able to draw on the wisdom of those groups. But it's only one of many examples of destructive development and resistance to it that inspire us throughout the region.
Yeah, we often talk about that as kind of something that happens. It's a death of a thousand cuts, and there are many pieces of the land every year, even in our area in the Hamilton Escarpment, that are cut down in the name of development every year. And another example of that is just recently in the winter up by the hospital, the old Hamilton Psychiatric Hospital, the last of what once was this really vast, kind of edible forest as well as farmland that existed as a part of the hospital system. The last of that was cut down just this past winter in the name of expanding towards larger hospital space, more parking lots,
Well, that's probably not something that a lot of us know, but are there other examples that you'd like to bring to our attention?
Some of the ones recently just along the escarpment is there's a lot of work being done on the sewer systems throughout Hamilton trying to expand their capacity. A lot of that is linked to sprawl out near the airport and preparing for the Aerotropolis development.
What's the Aerotropolis development?
The Aerotropolis is a business park that's going to be built adjoining the airport. It's going to look a lot like the Meadowlands probably, but be on top of like current farmland. So there's a need for infrastructure expansion in there that's being paid for by just people in the city to service these large stores coming in. And since the sewer system needs to expand and there's no room in the core, but the escarpment's not really being used for anything within the eyes of a certain logic. So a lot of it's been happening on the escarpment and clearing out treat areas.
So on the website, you write that you're interested in exploring how disturbed areas heal themselves and how humans can participate in this healing. And I wonder if you can maybe give some personal experiences about what that's been like and how you see this ongoing.
Yeah, absolutely. We really advocate for expanding our perception of value when we talk about healthy land and healthy forests. A lot of times there's emphasis placed on kind of pristine pockets of forests, but we like to think of things in kind of entire systems and start to include those healing lands as a part of what we really value. For example, meadows down by the train tracks, which we just visited the other day with a group of friends, and began to realize the plants that are growing there are the plants that are kind of our best wildcraft medicine plants that we use in order to heal and for health. And it's those plants are quick establishing first succession plants that are doing that very same thing for the land that they're on. So to really value and celebrate and embrace the health that is in all lands, not just a pristine forest.
There's lessons there to be had for us too, in that like this is maybe a good moment to recognize that we're on stolen indigenous land right now, and that myself and I'm sure a lot of people listening today are settlers here. And when we go down into those disturbed healing sites, a lot of the plants we're seeing there are not what would be termed like native residents of this area. These are plants that are currently found all over the world and were spread with the colonial process. As colonial nations would expand into other places, they'd be bringing these seeds along with them. And as they tore up the land and engaged in practices like building roads and mining, they were recreating the exact same habitat from the spaces that they came from that these same weedy plants were able to thrive in. So when we're seeing these like spaces that are deemed valueless, that are full of plants like
Manitoba maples.
And, like,
yeah, we really
dandelion, burdock, all kinds of things. Like those are plants that have adapted to this like global system of destruction in the same way that we've all had to adapt to it. The ways that we all like have suffered from colonialism and are dealing with the scars in more or less healthy ways.
So there's a lot of health in connecting with that and reading that history in the landscape, celebrating the healing that's taking place on that lands, and then reflecting that as a way that we can connect to healing ourselves from the scars of that process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So some people would say that it might be a good idea to get rid of those weeds and maybe to plant native species. What's your view on that?
And I think a lot of the time that those lands will take care of themselves if left to it. Like one of the plants that people often talk about tearing up is like garlic mustard. It's this, if you don't know it, it's about a knee-high plant with a very mustardy flavor that produces small white flowers, and it'll spread rapidly through almost any environment, but it specializes in disturbed places. So once a spot's been disturbed, even if it starts reforesting with native species, the garlic mustard can get in there and choke out native vegetation. So people like to say you should just tear it up. But garlic mustard, over the time, just through growing successive generations of itself, changes the soil conditions so that it no longer thrives there. And it actually paves the way for new things to come in while eliminating tons of toxins from the soil, that as it grows, it accumulates toxins and dies, and the microbes break down the toxins.
It's important work that it's doing.
So I think that a lot of barriers that people face in interacting with the land, I guess, is this alienation we face both in time and in space from that nature. So I wonder if you can tell us how you are intentional in interacting with that space.
Yeah, I think our main focus is on wonders and asking questions and how questions are more important than answers, and really debunking the myth of authority, especially in terms of forests and landscapes, which again often really value only the pristine nature that is almost a fallacy. What we're working with mostly is healing lands, especially in southern Ontario.
So some simple techniques for just getting out into the forest more means recognizing that it's like the lands along the train tracks and near your house that are wild spaces. It's the alleyway behind your house that there's weeds growing in. It can be your own backyard. So one thing that we encourage people to do in the workshops that we offer is to cultivate something called a sit spot, which is just a place that you return to, be it just for 5 or 10 minutes every single day, but just sit quietly and sit with your senses and try and still your mind and just pay attention to what else is going on there. Just get to know the plants that grow there, get to know the insects, get to know the way the sun moves across the sky, watch the weather roll in, get to know the sound of the birds, taste different plants, just try things out. It can be amazing how much you'll learn just from that simple practice, even if you can't get out of the city into like Dundas Valley or something. It can just be like an overgrown corner of the park.
Mm-hmm. So you've been conducting workshops, if I understand, and what other themes do you try and work on in those workshops?
Yeah, well, there'll also be a workshop again in Hamilton on July 2nd, so I'll put that out there now.
Okay.
And that's going to be through Hamilton Free School. And we go to different wild spaces around Hamilton and then work through those basic tools for cultivating a deeper connection to nature, really just fully allow ourselves to indulge in the treat that is spending time in wild spaces, which we don't do often enough, right? So there's a treat enough in itself in doing that. And then take that as a starting place for picking up conversations around reading the history on the landscape, history of colonialism, and rejecting, you know, capitalist intentions to continue development, continue destruction of wild space.
One thing we've been thinking a lot about lately is watersheds. Now, a watershed is an area of land where any drop of rain that falls into it will eventually join together into like either a single creek or lake. So in one of the main watersheds in Hamilton that we've been spending a lot of time in is the Spencer Creek watershed that covers all of Flamborough, Dundas, and most of Ancaster. And the Spencer Creek runs from kind of the Pushlinch-Flamborough town line down into Coots Paradise. So for those of you who live in that area, being part of a watershed is a very intimate thing because you are literally made up of that watershed, that the same water that falls from the sky and nourishes the plants as it moves through the soil and sits in the water table to slowly filter out into the rivers over time is the same water that makes up your own body. We try to understand watersheds as, rather than looking at like this piece of land or this property or that property, the watersheds are these like natural divisions that are intimately linked together. Everything within them is really dependent on each other. So the Spencer Creek watershed is part of a much larger watershed called the Great Lakes St. Lawrence watershed, which is actually the largest one in the world, and that everything within that is deeply joined. So if we can envision health, both the health of our bodies as they're linked to the health of the natural world on the scale of these watersheds, that we can also begin to envision resistance movements on the scale of a watershed that can truly fight for the health of all human and non-human creatures.
So I guess we've talked about how our health is related to the health of the land. I'm wondering if you have had any kind of aha moments recently, or what are some things that you're really enjoying seeing right now in nature, experiencing?
Spring is so exciting.
Spring is wildflower season. One thing somebody pointed out at a workshop on Saturday is that a lot of the wildflowers that are blooming are healthful herbs and like cleansing plants. That these plants grow in really close proximity to us all the time and are often just like scorned and cast aside, but they're things that just, they're with you every single day. Just by incorporating them into your diet in small ways can have a really powerful positive tonic effect to your life.
Mm-hmm.
Can I add anything else?
Right. I forgot what I'm going to say. So what kind of feedback have you received from the articles you've been publishing and from the workshops you've been holding?
Some feedback has been building slowly. I guess we've been working on this for about a year, and the feedback has been positive in terms of building kind of like a local appreciation of the wild spaces around Hamilton which isn't something that I even always had. So I think that's important work to be doing. I grew up in Hamilton, and you know, we can be pretty quickly dismissed as just an industrial city, but that we are so fortunate to live in such a healthy green space connected to the Dundas Valley, the largest intact forest, and where we were recently playing is sort of just a day's walk away, and I encourage folks to try that walk. It's up towards the Beverly Swamp, which is another really nice ecosystem to connect with. So just acknowledging that we don't have to vacation far away to find these natural wonders and find this joy and connect mm-hmm. with nature.
I've been hearing a few people who appreciate the critique we bring of conservation as well, that a lot of the time caring about the land is seems to be owned by this like professional class of like conservation naturalists who really work with things like the Ontario Municipal Board and with like the political system to try and preserve ever-shrinking parcels of land in a so-called pristine state. Mm-hmm. And that model's really disempowering to people because it doesn't value the land where they live. It doesn't value the connections they already have. It doesn't value the experiences and knowledge that people cultivate from actually living with land. It just values these opinions of these experts who are complicit with the development system. And there's a lot of great things about it, because if it weren't for these conservation movements, we would have probably been left with nothing a long time ago. But I think it's also important to be like critical and to recognize some of the shortcomings of that movement and the ways that it is coming to hold us back as mm-hmm. the nature of the struggle changes.
Mm-hmm. And to make space for our own involvement.
Mm-hmm. So you've talked a lot about how you learn through experience and you learn from each other. I wonder how else that learning takes place, or how else do you inform your movement?
When you mentioned stuff with Red Hill, we mentioned learning from people with more experience, and I think that was one of the founding goals of the project, and it's something we try and keep close to our hearts, that especially learning from movements among First Nations groups, that they're still really, they've been leading the way for hundreds of years in protecting wild spaces and resisting colonialism.
Within that same model, right? Like on a watershed level as well. Yeah. Same model.
So I think that's one powerful way to do it. Another one is valuing direct experience, just being on the land yourself, asking your own questions, trusting your own wisdom rather than listening to experts. Do you want to add anything else?
So if you were going to recommend a way for someone to get first involved, I know you mentioned just finding that one place, but is there any are there any places that you recommend?
Right now, the Spencer Creek Gorge, just outside of Dundas, in that area, is completely blooming with so many wildflowers and so much health, and spending time down by that water just is a treat for your senses to kind of rinse away the distractions that city life can create, and ground yourself again and root yourself in your own intuition, your own experience.
Spend time with the rivers and creeks.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're almost out of time, but you mentioned you have a workshop coming up. Do you want to announce that date one more time?
Thanks, yeah. It's going to be on July the 2nd, and mm-hmm. the details will be on Hamilton Free School's website, which is hamiltonfreeschool.org.
And if you want more information about any other workshops we're doing, we'll be doing a regional tour this summer throughout Southern Ontario, and we'll be doing many workshops in Hamilton. Check out knowingtheland.wordpress.com, or you can write to us at knowingtheland@gmail.com.
Okay. We'll link to your website from our blog. And before I let you go, what are your visions for how this will go?
Our vision is that more and more people begin to value their connection to the land and water that they truly depend on more than their connection to the economic system or to entertainment culture, and that we refuse to settle for less than an intact and livable world.
Okay, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.